GOP Senate candidates meet in their first debate. Gun policy changes debated at the federal and state level. That plus Donnelly tries to have it both ways and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 23rd, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, former State Representative Mike Braun and Congressman Todd Rokita traded barbs, while Congressman Luke Messer tried to stay above the fray in the first debate between Indiana's three Republican candidates for U.S. Senate.
Todd Rokita set the tone early, using his opening statement to jab his opponents with oft-repeated attacks over Mike Braun pulling Democratic primary ballots in the past and Luke Messer's decision to live near Washington, D.C. with his family while he serves in Congress.
I also want to welcome my opponents tonight. Mike, welcome to the Republican Party. Luke, welcome back to Indiana.
Braun was happy to hit back, accusing Rokita and Messer of being, in his words, career politicians. Messer tried not to engage, criticizing his fellow Democrats for not staying focused on incumbent Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly.
Did anyone emerge from the first GOP Senate primary debate a winner? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, who won this first matchup?
Well, I think it's pretty clear it's Joe Donnelly.
I had a feeling you might say that.
They look like kids in the middle of a food fight. They did not look senatorial. And in addition, their stampede to the right is going to have trouble for them when they go up against a moderate like Joe Donnelly in the general election. So I think he's the big winner in that debacle.
Generally, looking at the performances of all three, nobody stood out as particularly bad in any way. If you came in a supporter of one, did you think that's the person who won and that's just how it went?
I think a lot of Republicans, we know for a fact that a lot of Republican primary voters are undecided, right? And they've got three good options to look at. So with very different experiences in real life. And the trick here is that they all are very close in what they each believe, right? So it's a lot of this is on making a decision on who do you think is going to match up best against Joe Donnelly in the fall. I thought they all did a fine job on Tuesday night. I didn't really think anybody obviously outpaced the other one, but you really did get a taste that you've got kind of three different guys here and three options. I mean, you have two incumbent congressmen, but you have two very different styles in how they're running that campaign. Rokita's being much more aggressive than Messer in rhetoric and tone and where he's willing to go in this race. And Braun's a relative newcomer, but has an extensive business background he can draw from.
It was a 90-minute debate that was pretty heavy on policy. But like Mike mentioned, if you look at what they each said, maybe the words they use are different, but they all, for the most part, believe the same things. What's the best way for them to then differentiate themselves?
I think they are trying to do precisely that. And the way they are trying to differentiate themselves in the eyes and minds of Republican voters is being even more conservative and even more dedicated to the agenda that Donald Trump apparently has put forth. I mean, there were the stylistic sorts of things. I mean, it was obvious anybody watching the sartorial approach of Mike Braun with the everyman,
a little more relaxed.
I don't know if that's everyman blue shirt, but I mean, he didn't have the tie. He didn't have the obligatory red power tie or the jacket. I mean, the other two, the incumbents, basically looked as if they had been dressed by the same, off the same rack. You almost thought you were going to have a work shirt with Mike written on there.
That's a good idea.
If we see that again, I want
like
royalties.
That.
So that means you saw it's the stylistic differences where you try to score, and then the notion of being in line. I mean, the one that stood out to me was a Luke Messer comment about why he voted for the funding package that did several things, but beefed up money for the military as well. And he said, well, that's what the commander and chief wanted and what President Trump wanted, which struck me a bit odd because I think they're co-equal branches of government. And if it's as simple as Congress just doing what the president orders. Well, we could save a lot of time and money.
And that is roughly what Todd Rokita's answer to that was, which is sometimes, you know, no is the right answer when no is the right answer. Because on policy, it's probably a lot harder to sort of separate out these three. I think a lot of the focus from the first debate then ended up being the attacks from Rokita towards the other two, from Braun towards the other two, and Messer saying, come on, guys, let's not fight. Focus on Joe Donnelly. Is that fair that should be the focus?
Well, I think that the way politics has gone, that is what gets the attention. The public doesn't seem to have much of an appetite for policy discussion. It tends, and the attention in the coverage often is, you know, the friction between the candidates. And so you'll forgive me for the reference, but at the Gridiron on Tuesday night, which happened to be going on at the very same time, they checked in to see how the debate was going, and it was a clip of the food fight from Animal House, the cantina scene in Star Wars, and a nuclear bomb going off at the end. And I think that really is the challenge that the Republicans will have once this is over, because they're going to have to pivot pretty hard to try to come back from the perception that they've gone way to the right. And that's going to be a big challenge.
Especially with the voting records.
Yeah, we could also not do that. This may be reflective. I don't know what the midterm population is going to be, or the demographic of people that come out and vote, but it could be close to what...
if it's a very limited turnout, I agree. That'll be fine. If it's a big turnout, you got a problem.
We'll see. In the wake of a Florida school shooting, federal policymakers this week discussed gun violence solutions, while state lawmakers pushed forward with measures to loosen gun restrictions.
Senator Rubio, can you tell me right now that you will not accept a single donation from the NRA in the future?
Town halls involving students and families of the Parkland, Florida school shooting and past school gun violence episodes yielded new debate over solutions to the nation's ongoing problem. The solution most seized upon by President Trump, arming teachers and placing armed military veterans in schools. At the State House, lawmakers advanced two gun regulation measures. One would allow licensed gun owners to carry their firearms at church activities, even if those houses of worship are on school property where guns are mostly barred. The other would create a 5-year handgun license, expanded from a 4-year license, which would allow those permit holders to skip background checks at every gun purchase. The checks would only occur when obtaining and renewing the licenses every 5 years.
Mike O'Brien, let's start with sort of where the federal debate is at right now. Should we be arming teachers?
I think it's been hard this week to cut through a lot of the kind of hyperbole on all these different solutions from both sides of the aisle. And it's been true on both sides of the aisle. You know, the far right has accused the far left of wanting to take all guns away. Far left accuses the far right of wanting to arm every teacher. I don't think that was the point of this suggestion. I think the point was more how do we secure these schools that are soft targets, and is there a way to have people trained, individuals trained in those schools, like a teacher or an administrator or a resource officer, we're just not going to give everybody a gun. So I think this has been missed. I think that proposal has been mischaracterized in what the president's comments were. My dad was actually he was a police officer for 35 years on the south side of Chicago. In the last 10, he was a resource officer in the school. And this wasn't a guy that just, the purpose of that role wasn't just to sit at the front of the building if somebody walked in with a gun, shoot him. No. He was talking to kids. He knew who the problem kids were. He knew who the, who might be violent or cause an issue. And he's talking to those kids. He's touching them a lot just to make sure that they're okay. So that kind of approach, I think, is worthy of, and they do that in particularly violent schools in Chicago. It's not uncommon, but I think generally there's been good suggestions this week. We found out that Indiana is one of 5 states with the red flag law, where the law enforcement is empowered to take guns away. Rick Scott announced Friday afternoon that he's going to push legislation that you have to be over 21 to purchase firearms in the state of Florida. So I think there's some rational things that have been brought up in the context of this discussion this week. And I think it's great that these kids got active and organized and were the ones leading the discussion too.
What Mike just talked about is actually something that happened here in Indiana. We had a proposal a few years ago to arm teachers. Literally, it was just saying at least one person in every building had to have a gun. And the General Assembly took a huge step back from that proposal and said, let's put money into school safety grants for school resource officers specifically. Are you hoping that's the shift the conversation takes?
I don't think that's sufficient for the conversation, okay? I mean, you're going to arm somebody in the school, and you're going to arm them with some kind of a pistol, and you're going to let somebody come in with military-grade weapons and unlimited magazines. it's not going to be a fair fight, even if there is a fight. I mean, we have to ask ourselves whether we're willing to spend the billions of dollars, and billions is what's going to take, nationally, to do at our schools what we did at the airports. At the same time, we're underfunding education, which is the purpose of the kids being in those schools. The answer isn't to arm people there. The answer is to do something like Australia did and outlaw military-grade weapons in private possession and outlaw the large magazines and buy them back from people and stop this carnage. I mean, all we need are sensible gun regulations. Nobody has to threaten the Second Amendment to do this, but the idea that you're going to go shoot out with a deer with one of those things is ridiculous, and nobody should have them. I don't care whether you're 18 or 21 or 35. You shouldn't have those weapons in private possession. And then, if you want to talk about additional safety measures in schools, it makes sense. But you can't protect the kids sufficiently. And I don't think we should turn them into battlegrounds, which is what they're talking about. I mean, you have people suggesting that everybody be armed. We have the shootout at the OK Corral in schools. It's craziness.
I want to shift to the state level here and ask about the bill that would change the gun license so that it would get rid of the background checks at the point of sale in favor of the every 5 years that you renew that particular permit. That bill sailed through the Senate without a no vote in the first half of session, or a similar piece of legislation. Now you have Senate President Pro Tem David Long saying he has problems with that. He is personally, and he emphasized personally, opposed to that bill. Will that sort of sentiment carry through the rest of the Republican caucus?
Well, I think when Senator Long is saying that, and yes, he's making the distinction that it's personal, he still is President Pro Tem of the Senate, and he has a large say in what happens to that, even though it's out of the Senate right now. I think that the situation has changed. Circumstances changed. And I think that, Mike mentioned several rational ideas, and I think that if we're being optimistic, that those kind of rational ideas will be the ones that come to the fore. It's okay to hear all of this noise as long as the good ideas are the ones that rise to the top. And too often that's not been the case. So I'm hopeful that using your example and with this legislation that the circumstances change to the point where we can have a more rational discussion about this and do what is right for safety as opposed to what some other interest group wants the legislature
to do. What the NRA wants?
Brian Bosma and David Long both said at the end of this week that there is perhaps something they could look at in terms of school safety measures. So they're not talking about the gun side of things, but more school safety. And we have just three weeks left of the session, a little less than that, actually. Is there anything really substantive that can possibly happen in that short amount of time?
Probably not. I mean, if the key word there, substantive, you could probably throw some additional funds or make money, take it from this pot and make it available to be dispersed in another way. But to do something profound, I think it would be a challenge. Certainly nothing along the lines of arming teachers. And I would just follow up on Ann's point that here you have the sheriff of the county where Parkland, the shooting took place, saying from now on, he announced this week, we're going to arm officers who are on the campus with the rifle, with the automatic weapons, which again suggests that he feels that having a whatever they carry, the Glock or the automatic weapon, is inadequate and insufficient. Yeah. The last thing I would observe about school safety is just how sad it is. I remember when I was in IPS here in Indianapolis, the notion was they wanted the community to come in with grandparents, neighbors. Nope. It's a community center. Or have this notion of having voting booths there where kids could see the electoral process and vice versa. Sad that we've gone from that to this.
It's worth pointing out, though, with the legislature, it'd be reactionary because there's such a small window right now with 2 weeks left. But it's also worth, it needs to be examined how many failures there were in this situation of existing protections.
Right, like there was an armed guard at this school that clearly didn't do his job. There are other things that need to be looked at.
Right.
On 2 points on this, I think passing the legislation that's pending sends exactly the wrong message because it loosens those restrictions and guidelines. And the other thing I would point out is that Australia did this in response to mass shootings, of which they have not had any since they adopted this policy.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is allowing teachers to carry firearms in school a solution to America's school gun violence problem? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, will David Long's retirement shift the Senate Republican caucus further to the right? 71% say yes, it will. 29% say no. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Democrat Joe Donnelly's campaign this week sent out a fundraising letter attacking Mike Pence as the vice president prepares to help campaign against Donnelly in the U.S. Senate race.
The email to supporters said Hoosiers know how much, quote, damage Pence can do, citing his support for the controversial Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA. It also criticized Pence for casting a tie-breaking vote to confirm Betsy DeVos as federal education secretary, one of several Trump appointees Donnelly didn't vote to confirm. That fundraising appeal came less than a week after the Donnelly campaign trumpeted a recent study that shows the Democratic senator voted with President Trump 62% of the time last year.
John Katzenberger, is Donnelly trying to have it all?
Of course he is. You know, you're this far out of where his election matters in November. He wants to make sure that he doesn't box himself in any way. And in thinking about that, if you remember when you were diagramming sentences as a kid, and you remember how tortured those lines were as you tried to find, you know, the predicate and the subject and all these things. And that's where we are with this right now. The campaigns are just looking for ways to try to pin down various people. And you know, the lines to some of these things are like those diagrammed sentences. You know, you're here and you're trying to get here and it's all over the place. And so Donnelly's smart, really, to try to keep that going because when it comes to November, he's covered that base and he can go back and say he has. And everybody's doing it right now.
These two fundraising things were sent less than a week apart. On the one, Donnelly voted with Trump 62% of the time last year. And then, but Mike Pence is the devil. So, which,
you got a problem with that?
Is that disingenuous? Does the voter see that as disingenuous?
You know what? I think the strategy makes sense, especially in an era where nobody's being held accountable for, you know, what they said one week and the next week. That's so 2017. So as a practical,
you have to go a little further back than
as
that.
As a practical matter. I don't think so. But what he's doing, you want to motivate your Democratic base to have some passion and to get out, work on your behalf, open your wallet on your behalf, but at the same time signal to at least moderate Republican voters, don't worry, you don't have to work up a sweat here, because if I'm elected, it's not the end of the world.
Is that exactly the message that Joe Donnelly is trying to send here?
I don't know what message he's trying to send. He's throwing his arm around Donald Trump.
I don't think so.
Well, he's saying I'm with him way more than
he's
against him.
He's holding pinkies.
Right?
Pinkies.
Who, and then he's trying to position against Pence, who is seen as the kind of stable one in that relationship by moderate voters, right? So if he's what I'm saying is the moderate voter you're trying to pull over from the middle, if you're Joe Donnelly, who tends to vote Republican, but you're trying to pull him over, you're kind of picking the wrong guy for that voter.
And that's exactly what I was thinking about. In this state, we've seen polling that suggests Donald Trump has lost in popularity since the election. But Mike Pence is more popular in those polls than Donald Trump is. Does Joe Donnelly backwards?
What does that say, though? I mean, this is the same Mike Pence who was about to lose the gubernatorial race when he was nominated for vice president.
We don't know that.
And on top of that, you've got people more popular. He's more popular only because some of them perceive him as the only stable one in that relationship.
Including Joe Donnelly, though.
The point of this is that Joe Donnelly is a moderate, okay? He has been a moderate since he's been elected to the Congress and certainly to the Senate. And that means that there are some on the left that aren't going to be happy with him all the time and some on the right that aren't going to be happy for him all the time. But he's going to do what he thinks is best. That has been his mantra since he's elected, and that's what he's got.
But if you can avoid whipping up Republican fervor or fever.
It is what it is. It's how he votes.
All right,
Republican
Senate candidate Mike Braun this week released what some say is an incendiary ad on immigration reform.
Braun's campaign ad focuses on the recent drunk driving deaths of Colts linebacker Edwin Jackson and Uber driver Jeffrey Monroe, who were allegedly struck and killed by Manuel Orrego Zavala, an immigrant in the country illegally who's been deported twice. Braun mentions the victims by name and then puts the blame for their deaths on Congress.
It was a senseless tragedy, and it never should have happened. Politicians in Washington have ignored this issue for far too long.
Braun's opponents in the May primary are two members of Congress, Luke Messer and Todd Rokita.
John Schwanes, is this ad in poor taste?
Well, what I think about it probably isn't as important as what people closer to this think about it. And if we use that as a guide, I'd say the needle probably suggests it's in the red zone. You have Deb Monroe, the wife of Jeffrey Monroe, who was the Uber car driver also who lost his life in this with Edwin Jackson. She's not happy about this. She said she was disgusted. She said that her husband was not somebody who felt this way, that the problem here is about drunken driving. It's not about immigration. And I haven't heard anything, seen anything that coming out of the Colts organization or the linebacker's family, but I would suggest this, and this might be an indicator, this is a rhetorical question because it would never happen, but would Mike Braun be willing to screen that spot at the next team meeting of the Colts without a lot of bodyguards around?
It depends if there are a lot of Republican voters in that Colts locker room.
Well, let me just say this, though.
Well, no, hold on.
Let's say the NFL Players Association has actually gone on record as being opposed to many of the immigration measures that the president has taken. So I think there's more than just speculation here about where the NFLP stands anyway.
If you're the Braun campaign and this woman has asked you, don't use my husband's name, don't use this issue in your ad, why wasn't your response just, okay, we understand, let's take the ad down? There hasn't been anything like that from the Braun campaign.
Well, that's because the politics trumps the decency issue here. They've decided that it's better for them politically to continue to use the ad and to continue to use it against the wishes of the family than to do the decent thing, and that is to apologize for it and withdraw it. The very least they could do is take the names out of it and you know, make it a more generic situation. But they've chosen not to do that because they believe it's politically better for them to leave it like it is.
Is it politically better for Mike Braun?
Well, I think it's a dog whistle to Republican right-wing primary voters. That's right, because it shows the evil of undocumented aliens. It's obviously in bad taste, and it is an audience of one that determines whether it's in bad taste. I mean, if the widow thinks it should be withdrawn, it should be withdrawn. And shame on Braun for leaving it on television.
If you were advising Mike Braun, would you have suggested he run this ad in the first place?
I don't think you don't ever have someone use another individual to make a point like this without their permission first, or the permission, in this case, of the family. That's just dot and I's and cross and T's here if you're doing campaign staff work. But I said it a couple weeks ago, the underlying problem with this situation is that those three reforms he suggests do not solve that problem. They don't touch, obviously, at all, drunk driving, but they also don't touch the guy who is going to come here three times illegally as a criminal and commit criminal acts. That's not the guy we're trying to go for. We're going for the 20 million that are here and contributing, and we're trying to figure out what to do with them. And how do you get them in? How long do you let them stay? How do we account for them? It's not the guy who is here committing crimes and is
felon. Everybody would agree he needs to go.
Right.
There was also a time sensitivity. Not even a month had passed. This accident took place on the 4th of February. And then today, ironically, I think, as we tape this, it would have been the 55th birthday of Jeffrey Monroe, so sort of another sad irony.
Well, legislation to create redistricting standards in Indiana law looks unlikely to pass after House Elections Committee Chair Milo Smith said this week he won't give the bill a hearing.
The bill creates parameters lawmakers would have to follow when drawing Indiana's district lines. Redistricting reform advocates support the bill. They also wanted to create an independent commission to draw the maps, but it appears they'll get neither. House Elections Committee Chair Milo Smith says he wants to wait for results of a redistricting lawsuit at the U.S. Supreme Court. Redistricting reform advocate Julia Vaughn says Smith is just making an excuse not to act.
Ann Delaney, a prudent reason or an excuse?
No, it's clearly an excuse. Indiana doesn't need the U.S. Supreme Court to tell it how to draw fair districts fairly. They don't, okay? What they're looking for is what they can get away with the districts if the Wisconsin decision comes down. That's what they're looking for.
No, I don't think so. I think if we're going to have a comprehensive discussion on redistricting reform, it should probably be in the long session before we actually initiate that process.
All right. Well, finally, the Indiana Senate gave final approval this week to the bill legalizing Sunday alcohol retail sales at long last. The governor is expected to sign that bill next week. Mike O'Brien, What would be the best venue for that bill signing?
I think it would be my favorite liquor store, Pam's Pit Stop and Speedway, where I go after the show every week.
Demanding a discount.
Wow. Every week?
Is there an element to which Holcomb's got to try to downplay how excited he is when he signs this bill?
You know, this comes under the category of who cares? Let him go to a brew pub and get a draft on
Sunday.
Very
trendy. Yeah. Where would you put this bill signing, John Katzenberg?
I think any liquor store would be a good idea. Go to any place that you couldn't get it before. I have to say, I didn't think it would pass. I thought they would gum it up, and they got it done. So,
is it unlikely to be at one of Jay Ricker's convenience stores?
Probably, yeah, not. We could do it here, because I'm not sure what's in that mug right there in front of Mike, but maybe we could have new appreciation.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.